Our poor widow summons us still with her might, M-I-T-E, her gift, and her might, M-I-G-H-T, her influence. Her long shadow upon us is enough to disquiet the quietest of minds. And in her word is the gospel, lift up your hearts for this Lord's Day, the good news of artful generosity. But which is it, personal or communal? That is, first, on the one hand, Jesus says, truly I say to you, she has given more than all the others because she has given out of her poverty and they out of their abundance. She has given everything she had, her whole livelihood. Jesus speaks a commendatory word, or so it seems. After worship or by email, you tell me the first memory you have of a sermon or speech on the venerable doctrine of Christian stewardship about this time of year. Inevitably, invariably, it will have involved the poor widow and her mite of one sort or another. As in, there once was a single mother and son, and the son needed to visit the doctor on Friday, and the mother had to work, so she called the local Women's Society of Christian Service and asked whether someone might give him a ride. She heard nothing during the day, so in the evening they prayed, and she said, we will have to pray to God to provide a ride. We will have to ask God to give you a ride. We will have to wait on God's help. And the morning came, and with it the chauffeur to the doctor and back. And on the way home, the young man said, in the innocence of youth, to his driver, let me ask you something. Are you God? And she replied, farthest thing from it, by no means, but why do you ask? And he said, well, because last night I heard my mother pray, God, will you provide a ride for us this day? That is, as the psalm says, my help and my God. Help is divine. God is help. Or as Gandhi put it, for God to appear to the hungry, he will have to arrive as food. And we might add to the thirsty as drink. And we might add to the lonely as friend, and to the ill as medicine, and as to the war-torn as peace. My help and my God. I look across the congregations, nine of them that we have served, and in every one her shadow lingers. There in Ithaca is Amy Wetzel, caring alone for 3 decades for her bedridden father. There in the North Country, Crusty set a mow along the frozen St. Lawrence River in the autumn, nearly single-handedly raising by visit the church's budget. In Syracuse, Mickey Murray, whose husband died at age 40, raising her 3 daughters and having time on a Wednesday evening to provide a meal and a fellowship for the junior MYF. And in Rochester, Barbara Steen, losing 2 children and her husband, the chief mentor, by the way, to Charles Foster, theologian and educator, who rose every morning and made a list of 5 names of people she would visit or write or telephone. And here at Marsh Chapel, I am told through one of you, a friend of Martha Mead, who listens by the internet in County Durham in the north of England, providing the same sort of example. Jesus, it may well be, speaks a commendatory word, does he not? She, out of her poverty, has given all she had, her whole living. One widow we know fairly well at age 86 drives to church on Sunday morning in order, as she says, to make sure the older people have a ride to church with her. But one pictures her in 1965 at the end of October, spending the last coin. You know, there are some months, October being one, where there are more days than dollars in an active four-child household. There were no jack-o'-lanterns, so she spent a Kennedy silver half dollar to make sure that on the parsonage porch, as well as the others, there were jack-o'-lanterns for the occasion. Jesus speaks a commendatory word in our experience for those who offer all that they have. You know, Marsh Chapel, you people are so generous with your spirit, with your time, with your treasure, with who you are. You exemplify the gospel truth, which is you only possess what you can give away. You only truly have what you have the freedom to offer somebody else. And that's mainly your time, as in this fragment of time, 1 hour given in public worship to God in the service of God and neighbor. At age 11, our son was the assistant to the assistant to the assistant to the assistant for the Colgate University soccer camp, and he received at the end of the week 3 crisp $50 bills, his first official earnings. There they sat on his bureau all autumn until in January his sister was ready to depart for Adelaide, Australia for 6 months there, and as she went, there he gave 1, 2, 3, all that he had. Our undergraduates at Boston University have staged Margaret Edson's wonderful play, Wit, this week. It's about a poet who faces surgery and illness and death. She is served or misserved by one of her own former students, a physician, but she's aided by the care of a nurse and by the visit of her own teacher. Why is this play 3 times in 1 year offered in walking distance of Marsh Chapel? It's perhaps because it's at the intersection of intelligence and death, at the street corner marking the streets, academia and mortality. And at the very end, in comes the aged great teacher and sits personally on the bed with Vivian Baring. She has with her only a book she was meaning to read to her grandchildren, The Runaway Bunny, and after much awkwardness, she reaches, she caresses, she holds in personal generosity her former student, and then reads about a bunny running away. I'm going to run away. If you run away, I'll come and get you. I'm going to become a fish and swim away. Well, if you do, I'll become a fisherwoman and catch you. I'm going to become a crocus and hide in the garden. Well, if you do, I'll become a gardener and weed you out. I'm going to become a bird and fly away. If you do, I'll become a tree with great branches, and you will descend and make a nest where I am. Oh, in that case, I might as well just stay here, be at home, be your little bunny. Good, she says. Have a carrot. Here on the edge of the bedside of the lifespan, an example of personal generosity. You heard it in the psalm, my help and my God, as a deer longs for streams of water, so my parched soul longs for thee, O God. If you could have heard our own ensemble, Lorelei, singing on Friday evening this very text. Here you are, your soul longs. You remember, and your remembrance longs. You thirst and hunger for that which lies just beyond our range. The desire of the moth for the flame, of the night for the morrow, the devotion to something afar from the sphere of our sorrow. Yes, she, out of her poverty, gave all that she had to live on, says Jesus in a commendatory voice, or does he? Was that the gospel? Or was it rather not a commendatory but a condemnatory voice? Not a voice about personal generosity and its example, but a voice to measure communal generosity, as in, she gave more than all the rest of them, for they gave out of abundance, but she gave out of her poverty, all that she had to live on. Jesus speaks in anger. He speaks in criticism. He excoriates. He judges. He conjures in your memory the remembrance of Amos and the plumb line. Behold, I will set among my people a plumb line to measure you according to the demands of justice. Jesus sees her on this rendering and sees that while it's bad enough that the others didn't do what they could have done, it's even worse that she acts imprudently, foolishly, giving up her whole livelihood, succumbing then to who knows what. The community had forgotten her and left her behind, as communities sometimes do. As this week, one community in Chicago, the community in one sense of the whole nation, left behind a 9-year-old boy walking to his grandmother's house with a basketball under his arm, shot dead in the afternoon. As our community tends to do in forgetting as well the poverty of the outlying country all about us, the rural poverty, there are more poor children in rural poverty than in any other category across the country. As in the marked difference between those children of the bottom quintile, 20% of our economic demographics, only 8% of whom progress through college, and the top 20%, the top quintile, 84% of whom travel and progress through college. Jesus reserves his harshest language, one takes it personally and rightly so, for religious leadership. We shall have occasion at the end of the month to return to his voice there. He speaks here in a harsh way, but nowhere near as harshly as in Luke, where he is heard to say, place this against the demands of ancient holiness. They are like whited sepulchres, full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. Robes, banquets, long prayers, positions. We need to listen, especially those of us commissioned, given over to religious life and to religious leadership. And a word of caution for those of us who are religious, Christian, Protestant, Methodist, Marsh Chapel, other. It may well be that there is, again, a spotlight upon ministerial misconduct, say in another denomination, but no religion has a corner on the market of clergy abuse. We have our own issues to deal with. Two of the 9 congregations that Jan and I have served have, in the decades prior to our arrival, lived through the trauma, the travail of clergy misconduct. It stays and lingers. And so Jesus' word, harsh word, calling for a measurement on the basis of this widow's might, not M-I-T-E, but might, M-I-G-H-T, to recall us to the biblical teaching. You have finished probably already the 600-plus pages of Thomas Piketty's book, Capital. So you know what is happening with the evolution, the accumulation, and the concentration of wealth across the globe in our time. And you know that the issue of inheritance, once thought by the board, has returned, and returned with a vengeance, so to speak. It reminds us of St. Paul, 2 Corinthians chapter 8, the best outworking of the widow's might in Scripture, where he says, let those who have much not have too much. Let those who have little not have too little. It's a biblical condition. So Ruth and Naomi need one another. They need some strategy. They need the courage to change and to change, in one case, religious tradition, to find their future and their home in the full community. It's a biblical teaching. So Paul Farmer, perhaps one of your heroes as well, spoke this week at the College of General Studies. He signed books, according to Dean McKnight, for 5 hours following his talk until every student had had his book or her book signed and had had a conversation. Mountains beyond mountains echo still. It is a biblical teaching like that of James McCann, our honored annual university lecturer, who spoke to us about the Blue Nile and about coupling change that is human and natural both and guiding us to a better and to a fuller future. Make no mistake, her might is as biblical as Amos in the 8th century. I put before you this same plumb line. Let justice roll down as waters and righteousness as an ever-flowing stream. So while this tone of voice in Jesus' part is nowhere near as helpful on the average stewardship Sunday, and while it's nowhere near as traditionally lifted as the other, what fits in this text is the second. Did you notice the clinch? Devours widows' houses. Mark has put these two together, the general proposition to begin, and the example of the widow, the poor widow, and her might to conclude. In other words, she, out of her poverty, is given more than all the others. She gave away everything she had, all she had to live on. The poor widow casts her shadow across us to this day. Her might, her personal example, and her might, her measure of communal generosity, challenge us still. It's enough to disquiet the quietest of minds. Which is it, this artful generosity? Personal or communal? Merciful or just? Individual or societal? Friend, truth to tell, if we are going to have any future worthy of the name, we are going to need both in full measure. Her example of personal generosity and her measure of communal generosity and its lack. Or at least that is the gospel so provided for us in St. Mark in the 12th chapter and the 38th verse.